The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
All right. Well, I am not Vina tonight. So this is Scott Ellsworth. I'm guest hosting. Vina is out and about and could not make it tonight, but I am happy to do it. Love hosting this show. It's a great thing. Love WMKV too for putting this on the air. So tonight we have got a really great show. So for rental owners, a lot of the times they're residents who aren't good residents, they're still your customer. We don't want to consider them our enemy. So we have with us who's a lady who is going to tell us, give us some ideas on how to handle those residents while not letting yourself be walked over, but make sure that you help them and you can salvage a situation unless you really need to get rid of them. So our guest tonight is Andrea Lane. She is the Fearless Real Estate Investor. She's a powerhouse mentor and investor. She's got over 40 years of experience transforming just rental chaos into real estate success. As a founder of the Coast to Coast Real Estate Group, and she's also VP of MREA. She helps investors build systems, scale smart, create lasting wealth. Her mission is bold: turn knowledge into action and create 100 new millionaires in the next 2 years. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's a great introduction.
All right.
Appreciate it.
So how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here. It's so wonderful to be here and talking to you.
Good. Let me say real quick to our audience, if you have questions, you can call 877-772-9658. Or you can email vinaradio@gmail.com, and we'll get those questions in the queue to have those answered. So, Andrea, let's just start out. Just tell us a little bit about your background. How long you've owned rental property. I don't know if you're managing for others, that type of thing. So just give us a background.
So I've been in real estate for more than 40 years. I bought my first property when I was a young kid, and I did it. Like many people do, I knew nothing about real estate, but I heard that if I owned real estate, I didn't have to pay taxes. I could take deductions. So I bought a piece of real estate. No experience. My parents didn't own property. I knew nothing about it. As you can imagine, I made every single mistake in the book, and I self-managed, yeah. So I didn't know what I was doing, and I tried to manage properties. I learned that you need help. So that's how I started. But I went from there to building a small portfolio for myself. And then 10 years ago, my son was the same age that I was when I bought my first property. And he said, you know, Mom, I want to start, a real estate business. So we went in business together. Oh. And he said, well, I have two friends that want to do it too. So the four of us got together and we started building a business of flipping and buy and hold.
That's
and
awesome.
We did manage ourselves. And then as years went by, in a two-year period when COVID started and everybody was afraid to buy, we went out and we bought 300 units. So we grew from a very small portfolio to a really large one very quickly.
That is incredible. That is a large one.
Yeah. So when we started, we did manage the rentals. Then we decided, property manager would be better, and we hired someone. Unfortunately, the property manager decided she wanted to stay home with her kids, which wasn't the unfortunate part, but she hired two young women who I managed a McDonald's before they came to work for her. And so it didn't work out well. So we ended up taking on our properties plus others. So we ended up with over 600 units under management. Yeah, that's a little bit about how I got into real estate and managing rentals.
That is that's a good story. That's and it's the idea of taking what you had, having your child see that, want to do it, and then bring some other folks in, and along the way you help them create lots of wealth. It's great.
Yep. Yeah.
So tell me, so what kind of properties do you manage? So, for instance, are they apartments, houses, single family, whatever it is? And what kind of residents do you typically end up working with? Are these sort of the high end residents who are really expensive? Or just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we own units 20 and less. So we do have three apartment houses, which next year are going to be going on the market because we do not want to be in the apartment house marketplace. Very different place than single families. I want to own 10,000 single family houses. That's my goal in life. So we're going to convert that into single families. But we do own them now. We own multifamilies and we own single families. And we own, in the Pittsburgh market, we own more than 300 rentals. And then we own rentals up and down the coast. In different areas. And so we typically, about 50% of our portfolio is Section 8, and 50% are regular workers who go out to a job every day and, you know, they need a nice place to live and they're happy with the properties we provide them. So we're pretty mixed in what we do. We do not rent high-end, so that's not the marketplace that we're in.
I think the working folks who have a job, they're working hard. That's a great market. That's really where the need is, right? For workforce type housing. So
100%. And I don't have to worry about prices going up and down and the higher priced homes living on appreciation. Not my favorite thing to do. So.
Yeah,
I like the spot.
I would like that too because it makes for a stable rental portfolio that will grow value over time. So I want to just announce that some things coming up for RIA. There is this Saturday, that'd be the 14th. There's a program we have a Saturday sessions, an online class, how to analyze deals from your desktop. It's going to be taught by Vina herself. So maybe that's what she's doing right now, getting ready for that class. New investors who struggle with getting in information to quickly make an offer on a property. So they're really, it is important to be able to do that quickly. You don't want to spend 4 or 5 hours with one property. And then next Thursday, we have the 19th is our online meeting. And that is Getting Things Done, Real Estate Investor Version. So, again, it's five investors who run multiple businesses. It'll be a panel on large portfolios answering questions about the systems, tech people, and the stuff they do. So if you have a question, 877-772-9658 or email vinaradio@gmail.com. We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back with our guest, Andrea Lane. I think some of the issues are that, you know, you get residents, hopefully they're great residents. But tonight we want to talk about what do we do with the problem residents? Not necessarily that they're a problem, they're troublemakers, but it's just that they've got some issue that is causing you a little bit of grief, with running your property, the way you need to. And, you know, you can do the typical, hey, you know, you're not paying, you haven't paid your rent, we're going to evict you. Or you're causing a problem, so we're going to give you a 30-day notice to leave. But there are some other ways to do that. So let me ask, resident relationships, Andrea, what's your philosophy with those?
So, you know, most people think that you're the property manager and the tenants are your customers. I think it's the other way around.
Okay.
The tenants are the property managers. They're the ones living there and managing the properties. True. We just hear the problems, right? And so it's really important that, to me, that the tenant understands right from the start, you know, the expectations we have from them and what they can expect from us. I mean, we give them a good product, a really nice place to live. When they walk through the property, they see it's good. As a matter of fact, when they walk through the property, we take pictures to make sure that, you know, it's videoed of what they saw when they walked in. So when they leave, they can't say it wasn't good. So we start with a relationship of you're the property manager, we're your customer, we want to be here to support you, but these are our expectations of you as the property manager. Just like when you're going out to shop for a true property manager for your properties, you're going to look for people who are going to take care of the property the way you would.
That is an interesting take on it, that they're the property manager. So I'll have to give that some more thought. That's a good one, especially in single family. So do you find that's the same?
100%.
Do you find that's the same in multifamily, though?
No. And multifamily is the reason I want to get out of it, is you don't find it the same, right? People don't take the same ownership as you do. They can't say that the garbage wasn't put out on Monday night because, you know, the landlord didn't do it or the manager didn't do it. They didn't do it. They lived there. It's their home. So, you know, they don't have the same feeling of ownership. So I really like the single family model. I know it's not for everyone, but it's definitely for me. They tend to stay longer. They, you know, they have family, they have kids in school that want to stay there. So they tend to take care of houses better than that. That's my opinion. In with the clients that we have, that's how I find it.
I think it's the same. Same with us. I've got multifamily and I've got single family. I do find the single family less. They take care of it. They handle the issues. There are some maintenance issues we have to handle, but they're there and they want to make it nice and it's their home. And while they don't own it, right? They live in it. They're going to bring people over. It's their yard. Everything. It's there is a different take on that than it is from the apartment.
Yeah, they've leased the right to not own it, but to manage it for the time that they're there, and it's theirs. It's not right. Other people taking care of it.
All right. So you and I are both in the rental world, and there's issues that come up with tenants, and you can. I mean, I've got people I know in the rental, and they're just sort of, I don't want to say they're jerks, but they're really hard-nosed about it. You do this, you don't do it, you know, we're going to take it to you, that type of thing. And it's just really it just doesn't make for a good relationship. So what I want to do is go over some typical issues that come up, and you can give us some ideas, give the audience some ideas on how you handle it creatively instead of just going straight to, okay, get out. You got 30 days to get out.
Well,
good. You want to do something, Sam?
Well, you really can't walk out, right? You can't. It's not so easy now with the laws to just ask tenants to leave. So even if you want to be hard-nosed, this isn't the environment to be hard-nosed. So you have to learn to do it judiciously. You want to be firm. You want to make sure that they understand, but you're not going to say, oh, you didn't do something, and you said, okay, it's time to leave.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally agree with you. So one of the first one, the big one always comes up is they don't pay their rent, right? They're done. They have a bounced check. So how do you get them to that? I had one lady who had cancer.
Yep.
And she, you know, she just couldn't pay her rent, so what kind of things do you do that are creative that help in that situation?
So we had a tenant actually who was doing great. They paid their rent every month on time. There wasn't any problem. She was in a hospital bed in the living room when he was alive, and then he passed away, and it became a problem because she couldn't afford it. She couldn't get out. She didn't have the right care. And we didn't know all this. We kept, you know, calling to find out about non-payment of rent. We went over there. She'd come to the door. She wouldn't open the door. And she'd say, well, the rent's coming. I'm just waiting for my husband's insurance policy. And you know, ultimately, we tried really hard to work with her because they had been really good tenants. And at the end of the day, we said, you know, maybe we can put you on a payment plan. Maybe, you know, if you get money from Social Security on the 18th of the month, maybe that's the day you want to pay. Or if you have a pension coming in on the first of the month, maybe you want to pay 50% on the first and 50% on the 18th. Like, we really try and work with people who really have a good heart and want to pay. They just have life happens. You know, there's times when that doesn't work, but we always try that route before we say it's time to go. Now, we have, I will tell you, had tenants that they don't pay rent, they don't call us up, they don't tell us, no matter what we do, we bang on the door, they don't do anything, we put a 10-day notice on their door and say it's time to go. And that's not because we haven't tried to talk to them. Because if you don't try and negotiate, you're going to end up in a bad place, not only with them, you're going to have a bad reputation as a landlord, and the court's not actually going to love you for coming to court all the time with bad tenants.
Do you do any kind of long-term payment plans if somebody gets behind?
Yeah, so if someone so they were out of work and now they have a job and they had 2 months where they didn't pay, we will put that 2 months on a payment plan with their other rent so that they pay it over a course of time. We do that all the time. And we also do that. Some Section 8 tenants that we've had have run into issues with Section 8, and they changed the amount that they're going to pay, and they couldn't afford it. And so they didn't not pay their portion, their old portion, but they weren't paying their new portion. So we put them on a payment plan to help them ease into the higher amount they have to pay. So, yeah, we try any way we can to negotiate payment plans, to change the dates that they have to pay, you know, do it twice a month, pay when you get paid. We do everything we can to try and make it work.
Does that go with slow payers? Like, there are times when just all the time, they pay late all the time. So what do you do in that kind of situation?
Yeah, so we're a little different with slow payers. I mean, if their payment history is they pay on the 8th of the month, but they pay on the 8th every single month, you know, the first time we'll tell them they're late. It's supposed to be on the 1st, and the 5th, it means it's late. And if they say, well, you know, I couldn't do it this month, and then we see next month it's paid on the 8th, we'll do the same thing. We'll call them because now they've paid 2 months late. The problem with that that we found anyway, from a legal standpoint in some states, you're now forming a habit, and that's their new payment date. But if they pay consistently on the 8th, we just change the date in the lease that it's going to, you know, we do an addendum that you're due on the 8th, and we're okay with that. And at the end, they owe us 3 extra days pay or whatever it is. But if they are consistently late, meaning this month they pay on the 8th of the month, and next month they pay on the 12th, and the following month, and they push it and push it and push it, what ends up happening is they actually owe us an additional month's rent. And that's when we run into problems, and that's when we take different action and say, this is not acceptable. You can catch up, or you can find another place.
What do you do with folks? I had a person, I thought they did a good job. They realized they couldn't pay the rent. They decided to move out because they couldn't afford it, and they owed money. And they literally came back every month for the next 6 months and paid off their old balance.
Oh, my God. I'd be writing them praises. I don't think I've ever had a tenant who left come back and pay me what they owe.
Yeah, I would meet him every once a month. At the beginning of the month, I'd meet him down at McDonald's, and he'd give me $100. So it was just it was amazing. But he was a good kid, and he knew that he couldn't afford it, and he wasn't going to put me through that. So that's the kind of resident, and that's the kind of relationship I think you build where you want it. And I told him, I said, anytime you want to run again, you come me. You call back. You call.
100%. And as a matter of fact, I would tell him, when you find a place, if it's not one of mine, tell them to call me. I will highly recommend you.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I haven't had that yet. Maybe someday.
Someday. All right. So just a reminder for our audience, questions, 877-772-9658, or vinaradio@gmail.com. And we will be back after this. All right. Welcome back. Just a reminder that this Saturday, the 14th, we've got How to Analyze Deals from Your Desktop. It's an online class on Saturday. So, maybe it'll be raining that day and you'll want to sit inside anyway. And it's good, great information. You need to know that to be able to, analyze deals quickly, move on to the next one. You don't want to spend a half a day doing one property. And then next Thursday, the 19th, we've got our online meeting. It's titled Getting Things Done, Real Estate Investor Version. So going to have a panel of folks who will, help you, have a better system to get things done. So tonight, though, we have Andrea Lane with us, and she is a known as the Fearless Real Estate Investor. She has lots of units. She does multifamily and single family, but obviously you're moving towards just single family, and that is true. It's some people like single family, some people like apartments. It all depends. So we talked a lot about money that the second quarter of the show. Let's now sort of talk about the activities, I will say, of the guests. So, now again, it can be a little bit different in single family than it is in multifamily, but what about that? You know, when we put somebody in an apartment, we want to check out all the people over 18 to make sure they're not a killer and that kind of stuff. So what about that permanent guest, that person, the tenant swears up and down they don't live there. They're just a guest. What do you do about that kind of situation?
So it's hard, right? So the first thing we do is before they move in on the lease, everyone over 18, everyone 18 and over has to sign the lease. In the lease agreement, we say any guest who's there more than 2 weeks is no longer a guest. They need to sign the lease or leave. And when children turn 18, we also have them sign the lease so that the parents can't move out, leave the child there, and then we have to figure out how we're going to take care of that problem. So that's the first thing we do. And then if we see that there's a permanent guest, and frankly, that's not so easy to find out unless a neighbor complains about it. You know, we do some of our places, we do twice a year inspections. Sometimes we do once a year. So unless we're actually there inspecting properties, unless there's an issue, we don't see the permanent guest problem. So we talk to our tenants before they move in so that that is not a problem that we personally have found. I know that it can be a big problem, especially with grown children, right? They've lived in the apartment with their parents for their whole life. They're now 22 and the parents move and they want to stay there. Well, unless you have them on the lease, they don't have to pay you and you have to try and figure out how you're going to make it work. And we have had that situation where we've had to have a conversation with both the parents and the children and let the parents know, you know, if someone stays there, they're responsible. They can't just walk away from children, even though they're now adults. And a conversation with the children to make them understand if they want to stay, that's fine. They need to sign the lease just like their parents did and work, you know, walk through the property just like their parents did. And then, you know, we're happy to keep them. But that's the real problem that I've found with permanent guests. I haven't had anybody complain that somebody's living there that shouldn't be. And I guess we've just been lucky about that. But
it could be. So the other thing is, and this more relates, I guess, to apartments. There's typically there's a parking lot. There's people we have in ours, our 44 unit. There's a parking lot, and we constantly get people saying, hey, they're parking in my spot. They're parking in my spot. Or we've actually had a single family where somebody was parking in front of their driveway. I mean, we don't know who it was, but what do you do about those type of issues? And it could be, It could be noise complaints, too. So you might have a neighbor who's complaining if it's a single family, or you've got other tenants complaining. How do you handle the noise complaint?
So, again, these issues you're talking about are really in our leases, and we talk about it before they move in. So that's a good thing. So we have something to point to. But for noise complaints, and we have gotten those, we've gotten them not only from tenants. The police have notified us that there's been noise complaints. And then we have a conversation with the tenants and strongly suggest that they, if they're going to play music, that they play it during normal daytime hours, you know, not at 11 o'clock at night. If they're going to play loudly, they need to find another place to play because people live there. Again, it's not an issue with single-family homes that I founded. It's just been our apartment buildings and multi-families that we've had to have conversations with them. And we have not had to evict anybody, but we certainly came close because we were ready to go to court, and they finally decided that they would take care of the problem. He had a band, and he would play with his band. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And the neighbors didn't appreciate what they thought was music.
So
a matter of talking to them, making sure they understand, you know, to be respectful of other people, not just, you know, they want to play, that's great. That doesn't mean it's the right thing to do, and talk them through it. But that was the only time that I really came close to saying, it's time for you to leave.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
What about stuff that is, I would say, I call it sometimes tenant drama. more happens in apartments, but you could have tenant in your place and having some feud with a neighbor. Or in the apartment buildings, you would have a tenant-on-tenant problems. How do you deal with that? Those? Do you try to intervene? Tell them to work it out. How do you handle that kind of stuff? The tenant-on-tenant.
We always try and intervene. Right. Our goal is to keep our tenants. Turnover costs money. We really like to do it. And when we put them in the location, we thought they'd be good tenants. Right. So we always try and work it out. There's times when we can't. But, you know, you have to talk to the tenants and explain what the issues are and why there are issues with other people. Some people are just, you know, they may be an only child and they never had the issue before. Some people take it nicely and some don't, right? I've never had anyone who came at me yelling and screaming and ranting and raving that I was, you know, a bad landlord because I'm asking them to, you know, be quiet, not fight with the neighbor. And if it really is a bad neighbor, that is a problem that I have to deal with, then I have to talk to the person who is an issue about what they're doing wrong. And that's a more uncomfortable conversation to have, right? When you make noise and I talk to you because you make noise and disturb the peace, that's one thing. But when you are an abusive neighbor, that's a really difficult conversation to have. And we've had one situation where the police were called because of the neighbor. And so we had a conversation and basically we asked them what the problem was. And they didn't like their neighbor. And I'm like, well, that happens sometimes, but you don't have to see them. You don't have to talk to them. You don't have to be abusive to them. Those people, we did not renew their lease. That was our resolution with that.
Gotcha. How about unauthorized pets? So we have, like in ours, our apartment buildings, we allow cats, which actually is something I got to reconsider because sometimes if owners don't take care of their cat stuff, it smells worse than dog issues. And but what if there's unauthorized pets? How do you handle that type of a situation?
Again, it's a conversation. We allow pets in almost all of our properties. We have one or two houses that are really nice floors, and we just say, you know, no pets unless it's a service animal. And if it's a service animal, we actually do pet screening. So if they lied on their application, they can't move in anyway. We have not had the issue in Pittsburgh, but I have had the issue in Florida. And it was, interestingly enough, a single-family house that they started raising pit bulls, which is against the lease to begin with. Pit bulls are a problem. And we had to have a conversation with them, and they said, well, we paid a lot of money. And I said, well, you knew there were no animals allowed. And this was actually a conversation I personally had, a very uncomfortable conversation. And ultimately, I said, listen, you and your pit bulls may move, or your pit bulls may move, but you cannot stay with the pit bulls. Because they were not only, and they weren't out of their yard. So the yard was fenced in, they weren't out of the yard, but the neighbors were really concerned because they'd go rushing up to the doors of the fence, barking, and everyone who would pass, including kids. So it did become an issue, and they didn't want to get rid of them, so we said, okay, we have to ask you to leave. And that was an eviction. That was not a quick get out of town.
No. So we have one question from a from someone. It actually is sort of a little bit off topic, but considering you have grown your portfolio, there's a question from Joel. Where did you get your first funding to buy properties, and where do you get your funding now to buy properties?
Well, my first funding was a bank, because I didn't know any better.
Sure.
I bought my house because of taxes, not because I had any idea what I should be doing. Nowadays, most of our funding is from private lenders, from people that know, like, and trust us. We've been doing this for a long time, and we have a good history of paying back. We do some funding with a credit union that we use, and there's one hard money lender that we will use when we have to close quickly.
Okay. So that's good. Other investors. I mean, that's the investor community. That is the benefit of being in a REIA, that you get those contacts. Like, I can't stress it enough. I've had clients. I'm a CPA. I have clients who I've just told new people coming in. I'm saying, you've got to get to the REIA. You've got to get
100%.
There.
100%. It's the your network is what helps you grow your business. And I learned that the hard way by being by myself when I started. Once I found out there were other people like me, wow, what a eye-opener, and how it changed the way I could do business.
Yeah. All right, so we are going to take a short break. If you have a question, 877-772-9658. We'd love to talk to you. Or vinaradio@gmail.com. We'll see you in a minute. All right, we are back. I'm Scott Ellsworth, sitting in for Vina today. And you're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We have got a great guest, Andrea Lane. Lots of rentals, lots of history doing it. It started when she was really young. Just love having you here, Andrea. So I have two more items that relate to sort of the activities of the tenants while they're living there. So one is this one actually comes from some dude named Matt, and I think he's a little bit of a troublemaker. So it says, what does Andrea do about all the people who are applying for units and they have fake service animals, that they get a service animal card, or maybe it's the support animals from the internet for $20? How do you handle that?
So there are actually, and we use a company, there are companies out there that will validate that the person who signed it is actually a doctor or someone who is allowed to sign for a service animal, that the service animal's been trained. And I'll tell you, we have not gotten any really strange service animals. So I have heard of service animals being peacocks and raccoons, and I fortunately have never had to deal with that. But we do vet them before they move in, and if we find that it was a lie, they lied on their application, they're automatically disqualified from getting an apartment from us forever.
So here's what happened one time. So a tenant, so we've always struggled with the service or emotional support animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the way our attorney had told me, and this is not legal advice, you're not getting that on the show tonight, but he had said basically you don't really have to do emotional support. However, he said it's a tough fight, and you probably don't want to do it. So he suggested you go ahead and just have your criteria and emotional supports animals cost. But it was interesting because we had a tenant who was out, who called me from a pet store and said, hey, are we allowed to have a dog? And I said, no. And then somebody said something behind her. She said, well, what about an emotional support animal? And so the salesman was prompting her on what to say. And I said, well, yeah, that would be allowed. And then sure enough, she got the dog, and then there was that. So in that kind of situation, I mean, do you just have to go with it, I guess?
Yeah, so like I said, there are companies that actually do screening for you.
Okay.
They validate that that is actually a support animal for someone who requires one.
Gotcha.
And we found that that was the best way for us to handle it. And the reason we found it and decided to use one is we had someone who wanted to move in with a pit bull as a support animal. Now, I understand they can be very gentle and very kind, but that doesn't change my insurance. So it turns out that they lied and they did not get in.
Good.
So, you know, we're pretty firm about animals. We do allow animals. We have it in most of our contracts.
Sure.
You can have a cat. You can have a dog. You can have a goldfish, although we prefer no pets that require water for obvious reasons. If the tank breaks and you have a tenant living underneath you, it's a nightmare. But we allow it. So we don't usually have an issue. Like I said, the one time they wanted a pit bull and we found out they lied, we were very happy to say, sorry, you lied, you're gone.
Good. And
again, in terms of having pets, once they're in and getting a pet, we've had one person who got a dog in a house that we found out about because the neighbor didn't like dogs, not because the dog was bad. So there's a difference between a dog that runs up to a fence and barks at kids and the neighbor not liking dogs. And so we had a conversation with them and determined that, you know, it would be okay, but that it was an addendum to the lease that they had this dog. The dog required a fee, and we get a monthly fee for every animal we have. And the fee is actually put aside, particularly for cats, because they can cause a lot of smell damage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's awful. But now, do you charge those fees for service animals?
You can't.
Right. That's why I just want to make sure that people are clear.
You can't.
That you can't.
But
that.
I'm just talking about a normal house that we own where we allow pets.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what about, so over time, residents, we have residents that will become either hostile to us or hostile to our maintenance guys or whatever that are out there. What do you do with that hostile tenant as it just seems to get worse? How do you handle them?
So when I know that my partners have had hostile tenants, hostile to them. I've personally not experienced it. We did experience a case where we had to evict the tenant. And when we went in to check the apartment after he left, we found a room full of shotgun shells, rifle shells, and gun bullets, and called the police. And they came and took it out. And then they actually had their patrol cars going around the property management company and our private residence for 2 days to make sure nothing happened. He was not hostile to us. He did not do anything. It was just a precaution because we were afraid after seeing his arsenal.
Sure.
If the residents become hostile, I would just treat that like I treat everything else. I tend to stay calm when people get upset, not raise my voice and just, you know, try and walk them through what they think the issue is, because they usually have an issue that they're not sharing with you, and it's not the fact that they're being mad at you.
We'll have somebody who just is real hostile towards somebody, and we will literally make sure that I mean, it's only one maintenance guy needs to go to that house or that apartment, but we'll say two of you are going. We're not taking a chance. I mean, it costs us more money, right? But I don't have to get into this. He said, she said, I'm to somebody who's dangerous. I mean, and actually it's sort of crazy because I don't want to scare people away from rentals. They're great, but there was a situation in Cincinnati where a couple went down into Kentucky to collect rent from a guy. He ended up killing him. So you do have to watch out for that safety. That doesn't mean you don't do anything. There's just safety issues all over the country for anything.
Yep.
But you just need to take precautions, especially when you realize, either like you said, you found guns and bullets and stuff like that. And you just don't know. I mean, it could be just a normal, ordinary guy, but you just never know. So good.
No, go ahead.
So what about stuff in the yard? junk vehicles, especially with houses. I mean, with apartments, it's not as much. You'll have people leaving stuff out in the hallway. We've had that. But, and you could have a junk, like somebody leaves a car that's not operable in the parking lot of the apartment. We wouldn't allow that. But what do you do, especially with houses? I mean, are you going to be like, I don't know if you ever watch it, but there was a show on TV about some folks who lived in Alaska and they have what they call the boneyard, which is all these broken down vehicles and stuff like that. And sometimes you really sort of feel like, is that what this is going to look like?
Yeah. So we actually have had it where people have left vehicles are the most common, and we've had them leave them in garages. We've had them leave them in single-family houses. We've had them leaving outside. And actually, the outside is the biggest problem because then we get fined because they left their trash for us to take rid of. And the other problem is trying to get rid of a vehicle when you don't have the registration and title. Is an issue that we then have to get the police involved to help us take care of the problem if they choose not to take care of it themselves. If they are living in the house, we will give them a 2-week notice and then we will tow the vehicle away and of course put it on their rent. We've had that experience. We've also gotten a vehicle where we made like, I don't know, $6,000 or $7,000. Because the vehicle was actually worth more than they just left it.
There you go.
So you never know. We do frequently, though, have problems with trash on our apartment buildings. Even though we provide two large dumpsters or more, depending upon the number of people in the apartments, they bring their garbage out and they leave it in front of the dumpster because they don't want to open it and toss it in. And so what we started doing on the apartment houses, we now have cameras located outside pointing at the garbage cans. And if they don't put the trash in the pail, they get contacted the next day because we're going to get fined for it because what's going to happen is animals are going to get into it, gets torn, and then we have to clean up the whole yard, not just the garbage that they left in a bag. So that's how we're starting. Well, we started to handle it last year with the apartment buildings by putting cameras outside because then they can't say, oh, it wasn't me. We have a picture of you doing it, right?
Right.
So it's not going to go away. I don't see that as long as you have tenants and trash, it's never going to go away. But you have to try and make it seamless. The other thing we do have, again, in our lease, is if we get cited, they get the fine. We don't. And again, in the apartments, the fine is a whole lot more than the single families.
Sure.
And when we show them the fine, they're more likely to start behaving. They're not going to pay it. They're going to fight you on it. But they're going to start behaving better because they know the next time it's their bill and it will go on their rent.
Gotcha. All right, Andrea, we've got about 90 seconds, minute and a half.
Okay.
If you could just give the listeners one piece of advice to somebody who owns rental property or a wannabe rental owner, it was about setting up systems and doing the thing. The one thing I will say just real quick, a lot of what I've heard from you is communication, and that's what it's really about. You talk to the tenants, that's the key. But what is one piece of advice you can give our listeners?
So I guess it's twofold. The first thing is make sure you have a very good lease that has all the things in it that you want to protect yourself from. Make sure you walk through that lease with the tenant every single paragraph. Make sure they sign that you walked through it. And make sure on the day they move in that you take a video of the apartment and with them walking through it, send them the video that they must sign off that, yes, they agree. This was the video that we took with them. There were no damages. So you have something when something goes wrong.
Great. So just as a reminder, we have two events Saturday and Thursday. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com. I forgot to tell you where to go to sign up, CincinnatiRIA.com. Andrea, we appreciate it so much. You've taken the time to inform our listeners and given them great information. You have a great night.
You too. Thank you.